Forever Dog.
Hi guys, we're here to tell you about some amazing live shows we have coming up across the country.
Oh, all over the world, across the globe. Well, you know, we're gonna start with the United States of America and then see where we go.
And we'll go from there.
Yeah, so you guys, Vulture Fest is gonna be our first stop on Saturday, May 19th at 8:30 p.m. at Milk Studios. We are going to be presenting, let me just give you the whole title of the show. Las Culturistas presents
the Vulture Festival Segment Festival. It's going to be so, so fun. We're jam-packing a bunch of amazing segments into one show, into 1 hour, because we have a stringent time limit in the space, which means we have stringent time limits for the segments.
Yes, you know we're going to be doing some I Don't Think So Honeys, and you know we're going to be premiering a little new voice meme, oh you bitch, and maybe there's going to be some new segments too featuring your favorite guests from the Las Culturistas canon.
Yes, and they'll all be joining us to play these amazing games, do these amazing segments, and just chat with us and catch up.
Yeah, we're so excited about it. We love our family over at Vulture. We're so excited to be a part of Vulture Fest. So go ahead and get your tickets now. Again, that's Saturday, May 19th at 8:30 p.m. And then what's next on the docket, Bo?
Well, next on the docket is we'll be in San Francisco for Clusterfest on June 2nd. We have a show that's going to be so, so, so jam-packed with amazing performers. Even a star or two.
Oh, you could say that there's performers and then there's stars.
So it'll be at the Civic Center in San Francisco. It'll be so, so fun. We can't believe we're sharing this lineup with so many amazing performers. But you'll see some really familiar faces there while you're there to see us in San Francisco. We can't wait to meet you guys out there.
Yes, Saturday, June 2nd, actually at 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. That's when we're going to be performing at Comedy Central's Clusterfest. We're literally so excited and honored to be on that bill.
And Matt, what's next?
Well, what's next is going to have to be our I Don't Think So Honey debut on the West Coast in Los Angeles. We are going to be at Echoplex on Tuesday, June 12th at 9 p.m. You guys are not even ready for this lineup. We aren't going to be in Los Angeles for very long, so we got the best of the best to come on and serve 1 minute each of their I Don't Think So Honeys. You've heard the show on our podcast. You've maybe come seen it live. If you're on the West Coast and you can't make it to Clusterfest, you must come out to Echoplex on Tuesday, June 12th.
It's going to be so fun. We're really stacking this like we've never stacked anything before. It's going to be really, really, really great. And yeah. People have been asking us for an LA show for a long time, and here we are delivering, mama.
Yeah, yeah.
So check it out.
And this is down the road, you guys, but then at the end of June, it's going to be us. Friday, June 29th, we're going to be at the Bell House again, but maybe you'll hear a little bit more about that later. For now, why don't you just focus on Vulturefest, Clusterfest, and Los Angeles' very own I Don't Think So Honey.
Focus up on those three, and then we'll talk, okay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't tax your brain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, we've got too many taxes, am I right?
Oh, oh boy, bitch.
Look, man.
Where?
Oh, I see. My eye, oh my. Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that Ooh. Culture? Yes.
Oh my goodness. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
And if you noticed, I seem a little bit relaxed. Well, it's because it was a beach day.
Oh, you literally went to the barge.
Do you feel that I am... Do you feel like I got any color?
I didn't notice, to be
I
honest.
I did on the back of my calves.
Okay.
Because I was literally face down in my towel reading a book.
Oh my God. We'll get to the book in a second.
We sure will.
You've got that Greek melanin going on, the hints of it.
Just a little sun kissing today.
The olive toned melanin.
Although it's at first very warm day where it's like, I'm going to the beach. Yeah. And then it's you get there and it's not.
Your parents were there with you?
I went with my parents. Great. It was lovely to see them. And we were all reading books, which I don't think ever happens.
Lovely. Before we get to what you were reading, what were your folks reading?
My dad was reading a book called Ghost Warriors.
Okay.
And I think it was about, he's very into history, so I think it was about either Revolutionary War or Civil War, like...
Oh, I think I've heard about this book.
Yeah, okay, so he was reading that.
Yeah, okay.
He loves history, actually, now that, oh no, wait, I can't reveal this, but sure. I got him a very good birthday present.
He listens.
He listens. Okay. He's going to listen to this episode because we were talking about what I was reading and he was very interested.
Great.
So I can't reveal, but I will reveal soon on the podcast. First really good gift, because now that, like, not that I have a lot of money, but now that I have some money at all, I was like, I want to get my parents a nice gift.
That's
I've
good.
Never been able to do that. So I got them the first ever nice gift, and I will reveal on the podcast soon what that was, because I'll be excited about
it. How suspenseful. What was Katrina reading?
I don't know. I think it was probably something a little bit lighter than Ghost Warriors.
Okay.
I couldn't say.
It was,
Let's go ahead and make up the...
Pachinko.
Yeah, let's say it was Pachinko.
I'm only referencing Pachinko because I have to read it.
You're a big reader. What are you reading right now?
I'm reading... Well, I just finished our guest's book.
That's true.
And I'm reading some other stuff for the pod for some people we're going to have on that I'm really excited about.
Okay, yes.
And then...
This is cryptic information.
It's so
cryptic. Like, what the fuck is the birthday gift he got his dad?
What book
is he reading? Listeners, you're gonna just have to stay tuned all this information.
Okay, but let's talk about what we both read.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first book by our resplendent guest, who is the second lost guest of the lost episode.
Okay, so. I didn't want to bring it up because it's such a sensitive topic with HPJ.
We just have to bring it up just once.
He is fully traumatized by this.
Oh.
And, like, listen, we had a lost episode. It was an amazing episode with our guest, and it's okay.
We lost the audio right after we did
it.
I Don't Think So, Honeys.
We literally didn't. All three did our I Don't Think So, Honeys. Our guest turned an incredible I Don't Think So, Honey. And I don't want to... We'll talk about what it was.
I'm sure she's
moved on to other topics.
Right.
But it was... Really heartbreaking.
It was tragic.
But it's making for a great intro.
Yes!
And this episode.
You might be wondering, whose voice was that? I will tell you. The author of Well, That Escalated Quickly, which is coming out on May 22nd. And you guys, Bowen and I both read this, and we've been talking about it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's really... I'll let her tell you what it's all about, but... It's so applicable. I think everyone, especially if you're a listener of this podcast, I would imagine that you're engaged on social media and interested in social justice. So this is like really something for you. Like, I really want everyone to go pick this up and read this. May 22nd, it comes out nationwide.
Ooh.
And also the star of Decoded. You've seen her on the Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore. Come on.
And then
of course, the podcast.
Last Name Basis.
Patrick.
And we're going to talk about Patrick.
Yes, we will discuss Patrick.
Okay.
As Patrick is also a topic in the book.
He gets a whole chapter, baby.
And the topic of the life of our friend and our guest, Miss Francesca Ramsey. I have been waiting so long for you to come back because you were so gracious at the end when we lost it. You were like, oh, come back. And I was like, I'm so embarrassed.
And then we went home and we like sort of processed what happened. And then you were the one, rather than having us send you an email being like, we're so sorry, you sent us an email being like, guys, I had so much fun. Thanks for having me. Like, the most gracious thing.
Well, I mean, like, technical difficulties happen.
They do. Yes, they do.
And especially as someone who is not just, like, a performer and a writer, but I'm also, like, a creative and a producer. I have been there. Like, I have had so many times where I have spent hours working on something and tweaking and perfecting, and then it crashes and it's gone, and there's no one to blame. You know, you're just sitting there like, you are angry, but... It's not your fault, and it's not really the computer's fault. Like, it just happens.
It's nobody's fault.
Yeah.
The thing that it did take me months to get over it. if only because we talked about so much good stuff. Like that was right after you worked with Taraji.
Oh my gosh!
Yes.
So that was for Women Who Rock.
Yeah, Black Girls
Black
Rock.
Black Girls Rock.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, we have such a great chemistry.
It's so true. It was
that no matter what, like, microphones on or no microphones, it's gonna be a lit conversation.
Look,
absolutely.
I walked in and I saw them two just chatting away, and I was like, oh, this is gonna be cute. This is gonna be fun.
It has always been that
it's
way.
It's always been that
I know.
Way.
I wanted to stop myself. I was like, all of this is great podcast material.
It's great podcast material from the jump, because when we met is when I did a little guest spot on Decoded.
You've been on Decoded a number of times.
I think 3 or 4 times, and I even helped write an episode.
He's recurring.
yes.
She's recurring if you check the IMDb, although it's not in my IMDb.
You can put that yourself
out. Oh, no, honey. We will fix that.
I want to be known for.
Yes.
Okay, so I remember very fondly because we did a sketch called, which was Where Are You From?
Yes.
And, well, you talk about Decoded. Tell us all what Decoded is.
So, MTV Decoded is a web series about the intersection of race and pop culture and identity. We've really expanded to talk about stuff that's not just race.
Yeah.
Our friend Patty Harrison has been on a few episodes recently, so we talk about gender as well. And so we did this episode called Where Are You From? Which is about the experience that lots of people of color have where someone says, where are you from? But then they go, no, but where are you from? Ah! And Matt and I were on a date. In the sketch.
It was a cute date.
So it was very cute.
It was a coffee date too. Taking things slow.
daylight pouring in.
I think that my character, like, I don't know who picked the place, but if my character picked the place, I was like, good job.
Good job. Yeah. Good job. It was very
bad
cute.
Job on everything else.
Yeah. Oh, he was all in my business. Would not take Florida for an answer. And that is the answer, sir. Yes. I'm from Florida.
Yes, yes, yes.
But it was so fun. We were cracking up the entire time.
That was so fun.
Because it was just, it got like really weird and existential and like straight. We had like a Cosmos moment in there. It was
yeah,
just
that
very
was that
weird.
Episode got surreal.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was so funny. And also like love the producer. Love Kornhaber Brown.
Kornhaber Brown. Shout-outs to them.
Shout-outs to them. Andrew gets a little shout-out in
yes.
the book.
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does.
And another shout-out in this book. And I also met this person on that day.
Oh,
and this is
fave.
Another reason why I was so bummed that we lost the episode. Because yeah. we talked all about Delina.
That's my girl.
Tell them who Delina is.
Delina is one of my best girlfriends, but she's also my makeup artist. Mm-hmm. And... you know, I like not to say that I'm like someone who wears a lot of makeup, but you always think you know. Like you're like, I know how to take care of what I need to take care of.
Right.
Not till you have a professional yes. come in and slay your face.
Yes.
That's when you're like, oh, I know nothing.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know anything. And that's how it was when I first met Delina. And she's just like a gem. And she's the full-time makeup artist on Decoded. And she yep. does my makeup for all my red carpets and anytime I'm on TV. And she's just fantastic. She's so fun.
And you can follow her at Delina Medin.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the way, and I'm just going to get into the book, the way you write about her in the book, it's as if it was, I mean, it is like a turning point for you because you were talking about mm-hmm. developing Decoded and then like just shooting a bunch of stuff and then being like, oh shit. And just tell me if this is inaccurate, but being like, oh shit. I don't know how to do my own makeup. I
yeah.
need to bring outsource this to
no, someone else. We filmed 3 episodes of Decoded, and then MTV was like, so this is not the business.
Okay, but honestly.
No, but here's the thing.
Network notes on the makeup.
Are you okay
no,
with
but
that?
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. No, I'm okay with it because like everyday makeup and TV makeup are so different. Like, you know when you meet a celebrity and you're like, holy shit, she had so much makeup on.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you take the iPhone picture and you're like, whoa, they look amazing.
She looks snatched. Yeah.
They look amazing yeah. and I look like a mole rat. Oh. It's because like one HD cameras, but even like if you're taking with a shitty camera, like making sure that you have powder on. And I'm serious. Like I like don't wear foundation very often. Like I do now, but
yeah.
I was on camera with no foundation on, no powder on, just like some eyeliner and mascara. And I was like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah.
I was all like shiny and greasy. Uh-huh, like I didn't look like someone who was hosting a show.
Right.
Okay.
You
all
feel
right.
me?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
so it really was one of those things where I had met her on set for a web series mm-hmm. like maybe the week or two before. And we really hit it off when we've been texting about podcasts, strangely enough. Because I was like, why aren't you listening to Serial? This is when Serial had just come out.
Oh,
and I was
yeah,
like, are you listening to Serial?
Honestly, yeah, it was like. 3 years ago.
3 years ago. And she was like, no, what are you talking about? I was like, girl, you need to listen to this. Like, I was just telling her about it. So we started texting. And then when MTV came back to me and said, listen, we got to reshoot these. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I texted her. I was like, listen, this is so last minute, but is there any way you could do my makeup for this? And she had a full-time job. She was working in like pharmaceuticals.
Oh. Yeah.
She wasn't even a makeup artist
oh my God.
Full-time. She was doing it on the side. And then Decoded became like her full-time job.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, just like a blessing that I was able to be like, can you please help me? I'll be able to pay you. And then she was able to take that and start her career from it.
That's awesome.
And she gives you exactly, not only is it incredible hair and makeup, but also
yes.
good conversation.
Yes.
Hey.
You can be talking about anything, and Delina has she just like is so engaging.
She's hilarious.
Hair and makeup people are my favorite people on the set.
We and you know what? Here's the thing too: is you want to be nice to those people because
uh-huh.
they will make or break you. Not that you are doing it to be fake, but I cannot tell you how many times I've been on set and I've been like, "You have an attitude, and the last person you should have an attitude with is the one who's going to make sure if you look cute or not."
Absolutely,
it's HMU, baby.
It's rule of culture number 39. You be nice to HMU.
HMU. And honestly, if you if you're nice to the right ones, and if the right ones are on set, not that there's like a right or
they'll
wrong,
they'll give
one,
you little tips.
Or they give you fucking La Mer's.
Yes.
I had someone for this recurring thing for like 3 weeks straight put slather like $300 La Mer on my face every day.
I had no idea how expensive that shit was.
It's
that's
nuts.
Another thing.
Yeah.
That's another thing that like when we sometimes do like a little bit of light drag or to use makeup, that's another thing. Like women have to pay so much fucking money for makeup. And to all female listeners, I cannot even fathom the amount of money that you guys are spending.
That's why you need a makeup artist friend who has a little discount.
Yes.
And then you hit up that Venmo and you just say, well, I'll hit you back, girl.
Yes. Perfect. So here's another thing, though. Hair and makeup people, they usually are so friendly and down to earth, so they're friends with everyone. So if you are nasty to a hair and makeup person,
oh, they'll tell everybody.
Just know that they have relationships with everybody. Uh-huh. Be nice to everyone on a set. Not that you shouldn't be nice to everyone always at all times, but like if you're having a bad day, don't take that out on hair and makeup.
No.
And also, I actually heard some tea. This production that I will not name, one of the actresses like was difficult.
Okay.
And now the showrunner like will not work with them on any other projects because of the way they treated hair and makeup, because they didn't want the assistant to do their makeup. They had to have the top person do their makeup. This is like a secondary person on the show. So just know that word travels around when you're rude to people on set. And hair and makeup are not the people to fuck with.
I will never understand that. Like, if you are blessed enough to have the opportunity to play, like, literally, we get paid to play and have a good time and dress up and tell stories, which is just, like, so fun, right? Mm-hmm. You're not doing brain surgery.
Nope. No.
So to come onto set and be nasty to somebody is just, I never will understand that.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're doing the easiest job being a talent, truly.
Like,
I mean,
for real, for real.
And here's the thing is like, also, there's ways to get around it. Like, if it's going to be a late night, sleep before. Like, one time I found myself feeling cranky on a set because the call time was 7 p.m. and it didn't shoot.
7 p.m.?
7 p.m.
And so then you were doing like overnight?
So I was, and I didn't know that. I haven't been on too many sets, but I found like 1 a.m. rolled around and we hadn't even like done anything. And I was like, oh no, I didn't prepare for this. That's your own fault. Literally, don't take that out on anyone else. So I just found myself kind of like sitting in the corner, like silently, like breathing through my nose and at my mouth because I was so tired.
Yeah.
But like, if you allow that to show up, like, girl,
not to mention like millions of other people would kill to be right in that spot
right
now. Like, how many people audition and just like don't even have an agent or like sending out those headshots and like sending out those reels of like stand up and shit, like just, you know, taking improv 101, just trying to get their foot in the door. Yeah. And here you are like rolling your eyes because you're like, craft services doesn't have soy milk. Like,
soy milk.
My thing, my craft services like requirement, and I will throw a fit.
Let's hear it.
If they don't have Welch's fruit snacks, I'm flipping a goddamn table.
Wow. Oh my god,
wow.
She's here.
Hundo P.
High brow shit.
I want that blue little bag.
Can I just say, like, one time, so when we shot the pilot, I shot a pilot for Comedy Central, and one of the nights we had a late night and it was difficult, but you know, I got through it. And the next morning everybody was like, Francesca, you did great. What can we get for you? Like, what can we do? Because, you know, do you want chocolates? Do you want, like, what do you want? And I'm like, oh, I'm not really like a chocolate person. Like, what kind of candy? Like, any candy you like. And I was like, well, I love gummy bears. They're great. And so they were like, okay, great, great. So then I'm on set that day, and there's a guy with a cup of gummy bears between every take coming up to me and being like, do you want a gummy bear?
Oh my God.
The first time I was like, no, that's kind of weird. Okay, cool. And then I learned that that was his job all day.
No.
Was to stand there with a thing of gummy bears. It was so funny. And at first I was like, this is ridiculous. And by the end I was like, where the fuck? I was like, if I don't get those gummy bears,
the birth of a monster.
I am not going on.
The birth of a monster right there.
I respect
that. You shouldn't have offered the gummy bears.
Wow.
It was so funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
And I felt bad because I was like, this is really a lot. I just said it very offhanded, like, yeah, sure, I like gummy bears, whatever. They were like, you better have those gummy bears for the storm.
That is... That's, I mean, you made it right
life
there.
Life goals.
That's life goals.
Life goals. Speaking of life,
ooh,
let's go back to the beginning.
Mm.
And let's ask the question that we once asked many months ago, got an answer to, but now we must ask again. And I'm very excited that we get to ask again, which is the question that we ask all of our guests, which is, Francesca, what was the culture that as you were growing up kind of made you the person that you are today? What was the pop culture, well, whether it be a movie, like television, music in your life, circumstances around your upbringing that you decided this is going to form me?
I don't remember what I said the last time I was here, but I have been thinking about this recently, and I will never forget seeing Moesha in like middle school.
This is what you said.
Did
we talked about Brandy.
Because let me tell you, like the braids, the floppy hat, the like suburban black girl who was like a little prude. Like I remember like her friends having sex and Moesha being like, I don't know about that. And I was like, yes, this is my life. I was like, I don't have sex.
Not for me either yet.
I was like, no, don't do it. And I just thought she was so, and I also thought it was so cool that she was a singer and an actress. And I remembered there was a time in my life where I really thought I was going to be a singer. Oh, God.
I'm all of us, yeah.
I need to hear about Columbia Records reaching out, which is in the book. I must hear more about this. But yes, continue.
Oh, listen. Oh God. Yeah. So, yeah, like I had this time in my life where I like really wanted to be a singer. And I was just like, Brandy is doing it all. I remember I sang Sitting Up in My Room in like the talent show when I was in like sixth grade, I think.
Yes.
I think it was sixth grade.
I'm dying to see what the outfit was.
Oh, God. Yeah. I think I was wearing like denim overalls.
Yep.
And like a floppy hat. Because I was also into Blossom. So it was like a floppy. It was like a Moesha meets Blossom moment.
Beautiful.
Florals on the hat.
Yes. I had like the big, like the fake sunflower. Oh, God. What a time. But yeah, like Moesha like really spoke to me because it was like wholesome, but it was funny and it was like real.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to me, I was like, wow, that's the career that I want. Like I want a sitcom. I want to have an album. And like she was so confident. And also, for me, she was a different version of blackness on television that I was not used to seeing.
Yes. Right?
In terms of the fact that I went to private school and in many spaces, I was the only black girl.
Yeah.
And I would have friends who would say like, oh, you're not like other black girls that I know. And I'm just like, no, I'm like Moesha. So yeah, I loved Moesha.
Yeah.
We did talk about Brandy last time.
No, literally.
We did.
That's what you said last time. God, and then we also got into how Brandy, and this is like, it's like a beautiful feeling, HBJ, to know that we're going to get this episode back. I turned to him and we're crying together. He's holding my hand.
We're
He's
crying.
Not really. But so then we got into how Brandy actually is widely regarded in like the R&B singing community.
As underrated AF.
Not even just underrated, but as an icon of riffing, vocal styling, just like
there alto, was, like that, that like media, like, she is an icon.
She is. And like apparently a virtuosic pianist. Like she can.
Really?
Oh, I did not know that.
Like she can play the piano really fucking well. And then remember that clip that went around for a little bit when she was in Chicago? In the couch of Chicago.
She's always dropping the funniest, like.
But she's doing fun little bits. Like she's at a piano and she's just singing to the camera and she just sings Bish Wet.
Oh my God.
Bish Wet.
Over Bish Wet. Yeah. Like she's just doing that over and over and it's the funniest thing.
A gif of her that is so funny when she was on like 106 in Park and they were like, everybody's getting a copy of Brandy's album. And she looks at the camera. She's like, no, we need to buy the album. She was like, that's great, but like buy it. And it was so funny because it was just so real of her being like, don't give my shit away.
No, because honestly, it got rough for her in terms of selling music after a while there. She was one we kind of lost.
It's hard to be.
To make the transition.
It's hard to be a musician, period, these days with like streaming and like it's just the streaming services don't pay very much money.
No.
And that's why everybody has to tour and have like products and do all this like, you know, collaborations
Extra.
With brands and all that other stuff. It's really the whole game has changed for musicians.
Yeah.
But in terms of longevity, like that is almost impossible to like maintain in a way. And not saying that she's like succeeded or failed on that criterion alone, but it's like That is just, it's impossible for anybody.
Well, she's done what she's had to do. Yes. I mean, like, she gigs. Like, Chicago is like a gig.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she does her thing. Like, for a while there, I think she was judging America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
She's always, like, gigged.
She's working.
And then she's always worked. But what I think is, not that it's a shame. Well, it's a shame, is because so many people, like, I remember there was a video, which was, like, for her 40th birthday or mm-hmm. something. All these R&B singers, including Jennifer Hudson, were like, Brandy, you are the one. They were, like, trying to sing little riffs that she had done and, like, couldn't do it. And I was like, yeah, actually, if you think about it, a lot of music that she makes sound very easy
is technically difficult.
Like, the song Have You Ever?
Oh, my God, yeah.
There is some riffing and some, like, vocal gymnastics at the end of that song, which is, like, it's a lot harder than
it
sounds.
Whitney was, like, her godmother.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, like, she came up under some really talented vocalists. Mm-hmm. And it also goes back to, I think we talked about this before, but, or maybe I just have said this many times, in some ways, I feel like it's more difficult to be a successful singer if you can sing than if you can't sing.
Yes.
Because, like, there's some stuff that just can't really be captured in the studio.
Right.
It's like you need it live, and people like to be able to sing along to shit.
Absolutely.
And if your voice is too good, the general public can't sing along to some shit that's like belting and head voice and big notes. People want to be able to sing along to stuff that's like repetitive and like easy to digest in that way. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, if you have a really good voice, I think it's just really, really hard.
Yeah, you're 100%
like, and that's just like such a strange thing. Like, not to say that like every big popular singer doesn't have a good voice, but there's also a lot of people who can really sing and they pull them back in the studio
because they're just
like, ooh, this is a little bit too much for like gen pop.
I will cite this, the person I always cite on this podcast, which is Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. We started out friends.
That's like, yeah, exactly.
It's 1/100th of what she can do.
Yeah.
And yes, she is belting out the notes in the chorus, but you can still anthemically sing it along.
But the range of the song does not show like what her actual range
capability
is.
Right, right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and now that she's singing on the new album, Meaning of Life, and she's kind of letting go in the way she's always wanted to, like in her words, it's stuff that is soulful pop, very riffy, very kind of emotional and felt, but yes, you can't hear it on the radio because people don't know how to do that.
Right.
Yeah, they want stuff that has, you know, a smaller range. And again, like there are some singers who can break out of that, but I do think for some people, if your voice is too good, I think that like music execs are like, I don't know. Like there's something about, and I don't even want to say her name, but like,
say her name.
But like, I think in many ways, that's like why Taylor Swift,
I knew it,
absolutely,
relates, is so relatable to girls.
Right.
Like, she's a decent songwriter, but like, she is pretty, but she like tones down her pretty. So she's like, I'm just like you.
Right,
and you're
right.
Like, girl, you are 6 foot tall and like a size 2. Like, you're not just like me. And then like, her songs are all really, you can sing along to them and they're like accessible. It sounds like you're reading from her journal. You know what I mean? And like, there's something about that that audiences really like. It feels like you could be my friend. Like, you are someone I could hang out with versus, you know, like, I fucking love Beyonce, but like, Beyonce and I are never going to be friends. Like, she is a star. Like, she's not my friend. She is a star.
She doesn't belong to us in the way that Taylor Swift wants to. Beyonce's never inviting us over for the cookies.
Oh, listen, Beyonce is not inviting me to her fucking house and like sending me Christmas cards and shit. Like, are you kidding me? She's not liking posts. She's not sliding up in my DMs. She's not being like, we're besties. Like, no, not at all. Like, if she acknowledges me, I will be forever thankful and grateful. But like, you know what I mean? Like, Taylor's like trying to be everybody's friend.
Yeah.
100%.
Isn't her Instagram like Taylor Swift 13?
Yeah.
I think her Twitter's Taylor Swift 13. Her Instagram handle's Taylor
Swift. Like, I'm just like you. I couldn't get my own name either.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! I hope no Swifties listen to this podcast.
We've come for her
many times.
Okay, they tried to get my Twitter shut down.
Oh my god! Literally.
Well, that escalated quickly. I mean, yeah, they did.
Title book.
Yeah, they
look,
did.
Let's just exchange some Swiftie stories. Obviously you've dealt with this in a much. At a much greater
volume.
Mine was
very recent, but I'm ready to hear yours.
Okay, mine was Election Day 2016.
Oh, I don't even know if I know about this.
Taylor posts the Instagram of her standing in line.
The voting.
At the polls.
Mm-hmm. I'm with someone. I'm not going to say who.
Right.
Right.
She tweets it, and then I reply, like, too little too fucking late. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think just the F word just threw people off.
Yeah.
And Swifties latched onto it. And they were
like, aggressive.
What the fuck are you? She's not supposed to tell you. And I was
They are alt-right level. Probably because a lot of them are that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's think about that. I kept being like, guys, like, it's not about like what she owes us and what she doesn't. It's the fact that she like used feminism as like a marketing tool.
Exactly.
And it's like, I was like clapping back with like, and look. Like, your boy fucking threw down $300 for floor seats at the 1989 World Tour because I used to love her back in the day.
Yeah.
But now she's letting me down, and I'm just...
And you're allowed to say that.
Yes! Yeah.
But here's the thing. I really feel like the super vitriolic level of her fans is due to the fact that she has cultivated this fake friendship with them.
Yes.
Where they feel as if, because what she does is she goes on Tumblr, and when people write these long ass screeds about how dare you come for Taylor, she likes them. She likes them.
Yeah.
So she is like indirectly like rewarding that behavior.
Yep.
So she and her team follows some of these accounts.
Invites them to her house.
And so I feel like they feel like they have to stand up for her.
Like an army.
Like they are a Taylor Swift army.
Wow.
And it's so funny because they've come for me a few times, but most recently she did a cover of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yes, she did
September.
I listened to 10 seconds of it. One single tweet is I tweeted,
no one asked for this. All I tweeted.
Yeah.
I didn't talk about like the quality of the song. I didn't mention that it sounded like a funeral procession for someone that died in September. You know what I'm saying? Like, usually you want to see, like, your uncle and auntie, like, popping that pussy, like, BBQ like, to September.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. Auntie and uncle both popping the pussy.
Yes. Thank you.
But meanwhile, Taylor's, like, plucking to a guitar. Yes. Being like,
it was just, like, so sad. So I tweeted that out, and they were coming for me. They were like, bitch, I asked for it. And then they were like.
Oh, my
and
God.
Then, but, like, it was. Okay, but then the funniest was. You know, all the Swiftie accounts, like, they searched to see that I had tweeted positive things about Taylor Swift in the past. We're exposing Francesca. Because on my 32nd birthday, I tweeted, I'm singing 32 to the tune of Taylor's 22. Okay, this was 3 years ago. And they were like, gotcha, bitch! And I was like, what?
You're jealous. You referenced another song. You want to be her.
I was like, listen, I have 1989 in my iTunes right now. Do you feel me? Like, there are a number of songs on that album that I enjoyed.
Yeah, bop.
Exactly, but stay in your lane. This was not, some songs do not need to be covered. You know what I'm saying?
Really. There was no reason for
that. Oh, God, they were so mad. So then I was getting on a plane. I was like leaving a speaking gig. So I was not on the internet. Like, I tweeted that one tweet. I went back and forth with a few people. I got on a plane. When I got home in my email box, I had messages from Twitter that were like, we've reviewed your account. You are not in violation of our terms of service. And I was like, why am I getting these messages?
No. Oh,
they were
God.
Flagging. They were flagging, mass flagging that tweet. Then I went on my Facebook and they had like, and I know they're Swifties because like all of their Facebook names are coincidentally Taylor Swift and Camila Cabello. They love both of them. So either their picture was one of them or their name was one of them. And they were like leaving racial slurs all over my Facebook. One tweeted, Francesca's only saying this so she can sell her like flop ass book. And I was like, well, now that you mention it, that escalated quickly.
Flop ass book. It hasn't.
I was like, it hasn't come out. And I was also like, way to do research on me. Like, way to go, like,
flop-ass book.
I was like, okay, guys. But also, like, how perfect that you literally just illustrated. My book is about how the internet has ruined communication around like the smallest issues to like really important issues, right? And how like things just get really blown out of proportion and like everyone's emotions get so high to the point that one innocuous tweet saying no one asked for this, which is a fact.
Yeah, like, no one asked for this. And also, it's not even inherently negative. It's just a fact.
It wasn't even like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
it wasn't even this sucks.
Listen, Wildest Dreams is like my fucking song.
I love Wildest
Dreams.
It's good.
It's good. Justice for that music video because it sucked. I loved that song. And so I was literally like, not that I have to justify, like, I've given Taylor some of my money.
I've
listened to some of her songs. I didn't like this cover. It wasn't for me. If you like it, that's great. But people got really upset. And there were lots of people who were like, this is really promo for your book because this happens to you all the time online. And I'm like, yeah, it really does.
Her flop ass book coming out through Grand Central Publishing.
May 22nd, honey. And now, so speaking of the book, so Bowen and I have both read it. Yes. And I love this book. Loved and I'm it. Very excited that it's out there because I definitely don't know if there's anything that's so directly and so relatably tackled.
Oh, thank you.
The issue of social justice and social media living in the same breath and how sometimes they can really complicate each other.
Oh, my God.
So tell us about why you wanted to write this and tell us a little bit about what you want people to get from it.
Yeah, you know, so I had a viral video in 2012 called Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls.
Which I didn't even know this is where you came from.
Yeah, so I had been making videos for like 6 years prior to that, but I was working. Like I was working as a graphic designer. I wanted to be in entertainment. You know, I was sending out those headshots and I was doing stand-up. I was pounding the pavement and wasn't getting anywhere. So YouTube was really my outlet. And when this viral video happened, it completely rocked my world. Suddenly, I became the person that everybody wanted to speak about race and identity and privilege and oppression. And I think a lot of people don't realize that I didn't know. I was just like so unprepared and I kind of had to do like a ton of homework to get to where I am now.
Very quickly.
Yeah. And so I think through the course of that, you know, at the time, lots of people were coming to me and saying, write a book. But I didn't know what to write a book about. Right, and I just thought like, well, something just, I haven't done anything yet. Like I went viral. That's not, and I didn't want to write Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls book, which is like what everybody wanted me to do. And so I was like, I'm not ready for this. And then fast forward to 5 years later, right after Nightly Show got canceled, I thought, well, maybe this is the right time. Like, I don't have a job. And this is something I've really wanted to do. And I had been kind of like collecting stories like in a Google Doc. And I really wanted, first of all, to shine a light on the fact that we all have to start somewhere. And I think especially right now, conversations around social justice are so judgmental, sometimes rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes it turns into, you don't know what that word means. You still watch that show. You still listen to that artist. How dare you? And it feels, for people who have never been exposed to this stuff, they shut down. And I know that because I've been the person doing it and I've been the person on the other side.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, why don't I just expose myself in hopes that people will be a little more self-reflective and be honest about their own journeys and be a little more gracious to the people that they love in their lives who are gonna fuck up because, like, that's part of being a human. Yeah. Like, we all fuck up. And so, yeah, I wanted to do it in a humorous way, but in just like a really honest way, too.
It's so good. And I think that's what sort of distinguishes the book from other similar works, I'll say. Like, the fact that you were just able to turn that sort of mirror back on yourself and be like, look, like, I think midway through the book, you're like, look, I started out being this sort of, like, you know,
hater.
And I was gonna say, like, internet obsessed person, like you were fixated on certain people.
But trying to get views.
But here's the gag is that, like, so many of us have been that person, right? And like, social media has made us into monsters in the sense that we are all putting on this like show for everybody. Like, look at how great my life is and my brunch and my outfits and how great these things are. And then we're also looking at what everybody else is doing and feeling really bad about ourselves.
Yep.
And for me, I thought it was really important to say, like, look, I have been that person, mm-hmm. and I had to have my own wake-up call in order to create the life and career that I wanted, yep. because I was wasting a lot of time talking shit and being negative online. And guess what? I bet you are doing that too. Like, every single person is doing that some level.
Yeah. I mean, it got so crazy for me. Not that I was engaging too much, but I definitely was. I mean, I can speak for everyone as well. We're both off Facebook right now.
Tell me about how you decided to break away.
Can I tell you, on my part, cold fucking turkey. Like, one day I woke up, I was like, I don't need this. Deactivate. It was as simple as that.
I've pulled back a lot, uh-huh. but I mean, for me, the complication is that this is part of my
I know,
job.
No, it's very different for you.
And that's so hard.
That is something I really wanted to talk to you about, because I recently had a discussion with someone, and I had just met this person, and I... incredibly smart guy, and actually Lauren Ashley Smith's father.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I was out there. Mariah Smith and Lauren Ashley Smith are good friends of ours, and I was out there on a Story Press trip, and they graciously invited us over to their house, and I was talking to him, and I said I had just deleted Facebook, and he said, I don't think it's a good idea to delete Facebook because that just removes one intelligent voice from the discussion.
Oh.
And I thought to myself,
I mean, I wouldn't call Facebook an intelligent
right.
voice.
And so then I thought to myself, but I do see what he's saying.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because throughout your book, you have so many really good positive ideas about how you engage with people online and calling them in as opposed to calling them out every mm-hmm. time, which I really encourage people to read this book and read all about. But I do think, and then your book also gets into self-care, it was part of my self-care
yeah.
to get off Facebook, because it got to a point where I found that site became a place where I would only put negative thoughts. And
absolutely.
I felt everyone else do that. It felt like different from Twitter and Instagram in that Facebook became a place to dump negative feelings.
Yeah, and I think Facebook is also different because you have relationships with those people. Yeah. Like on Twitter,
yeah.
it's not my friends, it's not my family, it's like celebrities, it's media outlets, it's like some internet people that I know, but not people that I'm like close with. And
right.
there's something very different about when you're on Facebook and it's somebody that you went to high school with and they are just saying like super ignorant shit that like hurts you in a very different way
right.
than like Kanye saying ignorant shit,
totally.
Which is like still terrible, but
right.
they just like feel very different.
Of course.
Well, Facebook, I think, and this is, I'm just going to recount something that happened to Matt. And I feel like Facebook sort of exists in this very specific place because like that sort of exemplifies call out versus call in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like incidents where Matt, you were having this issue, and correct me if I'm wrong, where you were just having these public...
Oh, God, I was seeing them.
Yes, like Agora-esque, like
I had
arguments
a couple
with people.
Times.
But then,
yeah.
The tenor of each conversation was completely changed as soon as you reached out to them individually, and you were like, hey,
yep.
let's talk this out.
Yeah.
Person to person.
Through my own experience, I mean, people are surprised nowadays when you... go to speak to them directly
because
they
it
don't
doesn't,
expect it.
Because it does not happen.
Right.
And again, like this is something I talked about in the book, is that I had this, and I think everybody falls into this, where we want the cookies. Like people get
yes.
on Facebook and they're yes. like, I just want to say, if you're a Trump supporter, da-da-da-da. And
yeah,
everyone's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
thumbs up, you tell him, sister.
yeah.
Like, that's right. And like everyone's just like patting themselves in the back.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, what the fuck are you? You're not actually doing anything.
Yeah.
I have totally done that. I've totally been there. And then what ends up happening is that you realize like that doesn't actually do anything. That does nothing.
Those aren't even cookies.
No, and they don't taste good. They're like gluten-free, like they're like the diet cookies, like
yeah.
made of
yeah,
like
yeah,
fucking
yeah.
sawdust. Like they're nothing. And then you have somebody who like jumps into the conversation, who like genuinely doesn't know anything. They put their foot in their mouths and
yeah.
then like everybody descends on them.
It becomes confusing too, because it's what the discussion was initially about, and then this subsect of this person inserting themselves, and all of a sudden it's confusing, and also timing is weird. Remember, it's not a conversation.
Yeah.
You could reply to something
and
after
then an hour
two
later,
more comments
and then
pop
there's
in,
like 2 days later,
cetera.
And then like people from like all different cross sections of her life like chime in. I remember after the election, Everybody was posting about, you know, they were upset about Donald Trump. And my dad had like just joined Facebook. Mm-hmm. Now, my dad lives in South Carolina. He like there's no internet cafes. Like he didn't have internet for a really long time. So he like just got on Facebook.
Oh, boy.
And he posted something like, you know, like on my Facebook wall, like it's in God's hands or something, which I was like, oh, God. But oh, I also know my dad. Right. I know
him.
And I had friends from college who were like, listen up, sir. And I was like, holy shit. Like, friend from, like, who's like a fucking feminist scholar is like going off on my dad about like intersectionality and how, like, and how it's like easy for him as like a straight cis dude to say it's in God's hands, but she's agnostic and like, and like, all very valid things, but I also was just like, my dad does not even know like what you
were
talking
about.
He doesn't know what these words mean. And now like everybody else is tagging on so that like they can look cooler. And I was just like, oh my God, I just have to like delete this and call my dad and be like, okay, listen. You can't do that. Like that's how you feel about it. But like, this is why other people got upset. And it was, if I hadn't called him and talked to him, I feel like he would have felt completely different about that situation. And most of us, I feel like too often we're so quick to like go in on somebody online that we actually care about that it would be so different if we just picked up the phone and talked to
it
them.
It could be over 100%. In seconds.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, and I want to talk about, because this sort of gets into, and I don't know, and tell me if these aren't necessarily the same things. You talk about cookies a lot, and that's a Chimamanda Adichie sort of quote from Americana, where it's like,
you don't get a cookie for, like, racism shouldn't exist. You don't get a cookie for, like, not being racist.
Right.
Beautiful quote. Like, just is perfect. Is that impulse to, like, fucking descend on someone just to, like, performatively show how woke or whatever you are? Like, is that some, how do you sort of, I always struggle with, like, separating like virtue signaling with like actually trying to be educational. But you know what? No, you've answered my own question.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
For some people.
But calling in is different. Calling in is not virtue signaling.
Yeah. Because calling
you're not
doing
in it publicly.
Yeah. Calling in, you, I mean, and if you're not like familiar with the term, calling in is like taking somebody aside and having like a private personal conversation with them. And it takes, it's a lot more work. It's a lot more emotional labor, which is why a lot of people don't want to do it.
Right,
and I totally get that. Mm-hmm. And I think especially for like marginalized people, you know, like every time a straight person says something stupid, like you don't want to have to like pull them aside and like explain to them like, you know, like LGBTQ history. Like you don't want to do that work. And I totally get that.
Right.
But I also think sometimes we kind of have to. Mm-hmm. And for me, I do think sometimes people descend on other people because they need an outlet. And it is very frustrating, especially like there's so much scary shit happening in the world, like life and death shit. And when somebody completely invalidates your experience or just says something really dismissive or just downright ignorant, even if they don't mean it in that way, and you're just like mad, like you have probably had those times where you're like, oh, I have time today. And like, you don't really have time. You're like, I have somewhere to be, but I'm going the fuck in. Like I have all the gifts. I have like all the emojis. Like I am ready. Like catchphrases, everything, right? And it's like, not even about them anymore.
Catchphrases and all.
You know what I mean?
Yes,
people
yes.
are like, you know, they're like, okay, Becky. And they're like, my name's Melissa, and you're like,
same
no,
difference.
It's not Becky, Miss Mayo. Like all of a sudden, like it just turns into something else. And again, sometimes it's a performance, and sometimes it's a cathartic experience where you're just like, I'm really upset about this, or like, not to keep bringing up Kanye, but like, he most recently said that like slavery was a choice, and Black Twitter turned it into like a hilarious hashtag where it like became cathartic, where we were dragging Kanye, but we were also kind of just like laughing at the idea of like, this is something people say all the time, like, oh, if I was in slavery, I would have done A, B, and C. Now let's all make jokes about it, right? And like, let's all commiserate and how stupid this is, but also like, say something funny and educational. Right. So I think that sometimes it is for other people.
Yes.
And sometimes it is just like, I need to get this off of my chest. And I think I've been in both of those places.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's the call out culture, which I think can be positive because then you can at least feel like you're not alone here. When people right. do say, hi, I see this and I'm responding. And I think sometimes call in culture calling in can feel intimidating because then you're responsible for the person's reaction. And there's actually a paragraph in your book that I wanted to draw attention to specifically because I've actually had a very tearful conversation with a member of my family when I brought up their privilege. And mm-hmm. I wanted to read this little, if I can.
Sure. Yes.
Here's what I've learned. Conversations about race and privilege are difficult, especially with someone you love. When Patrick, your husband, and I first talked about white privilege, I remember him getting hung up on the word privilege itself, like so many people do. In many ways, the word is a misnomer since it's so closely associated with wealth and a complete lack of struggle. So instead of trying to explain it, getting inevitably more and more agitated as I did so, I pivoted and talked about my own privilege as a straight, able-bodied cis woman. No one asked me invasive questions about my genitals or gross relationship questions like, which one of you is the man? The conversation slowly grew from, you have privilege, to, everyone has privilege, so let's figure out how to navigate it. And I thought that was really a good way to go about future conversations like this because the person that I had this discussion with, it became a fight
when
I said privilege.
Oh my God, that word shuts people down.
Because they don't understand that it's not saying you've had it easy your whole life and it's not ignoring any sort of marginalization that you may feel you're a part of as well.
The minute you bring up privilege, people are like, one time I broke my leg in third grade and I couldn't go swimming all summer long. And you're like, okay, great.
Especially white people who, because they've had economic struggles in their life, they say, how dare you say I'm privileged? And it's just this, it's an acknowledgement of what separates you from actual marginalized groups. And I think that is a way, that is something to acknowledge, is that the word privilege rings a certain bell in people's ears that it need not.
Right. Well, and I think that, again, that's like one of the big themes of this book is that there's so much stuff that people don't know.
Right.
And so when you go into a conversation with somebody of like, you're wrong because you don't know this thing, they are like, well, I don't even know what you're talking about. So like, I don't know that. How do I know that I'm wrong if I don't know about the thing that you're telling? I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So how do we even start, right?
It's like speaking another language. And also when you're speaking a language that sounds talk downy because it obviously is like educated or like required a diversity of opinion to arrive there, it can feel like, wow, this person thinks they're better than
me. Just correcting someone's behavior in any like arena is gonna feel like a little like, oh God, you're telling me that I did something wrong. And I think people in general just don't like to be corrected. And also, I don't know if it's like a specifically American thing, but in some ways I mean, I'm only an American, so I don't know it any other way, but I feel like it feels very like, this is who I am, take me or leave me, like I'm grown, like gonna be who I am. Like people are not comfortable admitting when they're wrong.
No.
And so like when you tell someone like you are wrong or you just hurt me, like people go on the defensive. And the privilege thing, I really realized that like white privilege is the one that everybody knows of. And so they think like, oh, you're only saying that white people have privilege. And it's like, no. I am an able-bodied person. I can go to any bathroom anywhere and I am fine, right? Like I never have to think about like, will my wheelchair fit in the store? Like, I remember I went out to dinner with a friend who's in a wheelchair and we'd never gone out to a restaurant before. And we went to a fucking restaurant and there were stairs leading into the restaurant. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't even
think of this.
Like, I never would have thought about that because I've gone to this fucking restaurant. And it wasn't like a lot of stairs. It was like three stairs. And she was like, it's fine. Like, I know how to do it. But I also had this moment of like, oh my God, I never think about this ever. It's not my fault. Like, I'm not a bad person for it.
Right.
But like, I had a moment of like, oh wow, like,
that's privilege.
That's my privilege as an able-bodied person.
And I think, and what you touch on in the book is that privilege just means the different ways in which people move through the world. Oh, and then you like have this cute story about a caterpillar and a snail going to a party, and like it explains it.
I love
perfectly.
That. And also, it was very funny the way it ended.
Thank you.
So, yeah, yeah.
Thanks. You know, I often describe my work as like when you are feeding a baby like vegetables and you like do the airplane, like you're still getting the baby the veggies, but you're like, here you go.
Yeah.
Like, I just try to take, I love analogies. So I try to like wrap things in like a funny joke or an analogy or like a self drag and hope that people will say like, oh, now I get it. You're not yelling at me. You're not telling me that like I'm just a bad person. You're saying like we all have fucked up. And like, here's another way to understand this fuck yes. up and like move past it.
That's great. Let's take a quick break and yeah. then we'll be right back
with our sponsor.
With our sponsor, and we'll be right back with Francesca.
You know, Bowen, here's the thing. I have to be honest. I'm actually having some trouble sleeping.
Oh my God, same.
I am in the market for a new mattress.
Same.
Okay, so I have a really good idea for both of us.
Okay.
We must pursue Helix Sleep Mattress and Pillows. Okay, listen. Helix is going to be the new frontier when it comes to your sleep experience, guys. And remember this. There's nobody on the planet like you. So why would you buy a mattress just built for everyone else?
Wow, that's you know, you so wouldn't true. Do that. You wouldn't do that. And Helix Sleep customizes mattresses and pillows for every sleep experience.
Yeah, so if you are interested in how this works, listen up. I'm about to tell you. You go to helixsleep.com. You fill out a 2-minute sleep quiz, and they will design a custom mattress for you. And get this, it doesn't just end with, oh, here's what kind of mattress I want and we're gonna get it and then me and my partner are both gonna deal with it. No, you can both fill out this survey separately and they will literally give you a mattress that you can try for 100 days for free. And one side of it can be good for you, that's literally like designed for your sleep experience right. based on the quiz. And then the other side of the bed is like really designed for your partner. So you don't have to compromise or like, you know, if you're really cold at night.
Uh-huh.
And like your partner gets really warm at night. You can have a mattress that is good for both of you.
For both bedmates.
For both bedmates.
Amazing. Well, Helix Sleep is the world's leading sleep expert mattress. Literally, they've worked with the world's leading sleep experts and they tailor everything to your specific height, weight, and sleep preferences so you can have the best sleep of your life at an unbeatable price.
The all new pillows are fully adjustable so you can achieve perfect comfort regardless of sleep position or body type. Because if you thought this was just mattresses, there's also pillows. But you know, it's about the mattress.
It's about the mattress, and Helix Sleep has thousands of 5-star reviews. Plus, of course, you get 100 nights to try them out.
Yeah, so here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to helixsleep.com/Las Culturistas right now, and you'll get up to $125 toward your mattress order.
That's helixsleep.com/Las Culturistas for up to $125 off your mattress order.
And one more time, because we believe in it, bitch. helixsleep.com/Las Culturistas. Go there now and enjoy your sleep experience. We are back with Francesca Ramsey, who I am confident to say is one of the hardest working people that
oh
I
my
know.
God.
And seriously, and oh God. Seriously,
full stop.
I mean, not even just like with the career, like we see you up in the gym.
Listen. She's trying to be booked tour ready.
I think about it all the time. And so now I want to just read something that you said. Look at your work as a contract you have with
yes,
yourself.
Yes, I love this part.
I loved that. Because then you go on to say, getting auditions is work, posting videos is work. Even if you don't book the gig or go viral, you've still met the conditions of your contract if you do that. So especially in this kind of career where you're kind of trying to create your own career, which is, I think, what we both do and you've done for so many years successfully, just kind of at least giving yourself every opportunity to succeed.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, such an important thing. Like, can you talk about being like a self-starter?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is like that specific thing is something that I learned from a girl who I was throwing mad shade at.
Obsessed with shading, yeah.
I just thought that she was not successful. I didn't get it. I thought she was like not that talented. And I met her at a party and she was super nice. And I said like, how do you do it? How mm-hmm. do you do it all? And that was the thing that she said to me. And it really shook me because I realized that I was making lots of excuses for myself. Mm-hmm. Whether it was I got an audition and I only had X amount of hours to learn the sides. So then I was like, well, then I'm not going to learn it, or I'm not gonna go,
or I can't, there's not enough time, so
why
try?
There's not enough time, yeah. So why try? Or like, I'm not even gonna like, you know, get memorized or whatever mm-hmm. it was. And I was just always making excuses for myself. Mm-hmm. And I realized that at the end of the day, the only person that's responsible for my career is me. Mm. And especially as a creator,
yes.
we have we have a luxury that many do not have, in that like we really don't need somebody to offer us a job. Like, mm-hmm. we can start a podcast, write a web series, go do stand up, write a sketch. Like, we can make stuff, mm-hmm. and that is leading to so many awesome opportunities. We know in this room between us, like, so many people who have television shows and nobody gave them the show. Nope. They like banged down doors. They made those opportunities happen for themselves. And so I really needed to have that experience with this person in order to realize, like, oh, it's that easy that, like, I can just do the work. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, like, you have to set goals for yourself. And if the goal is just get to the audition, then you did it.
Yeah. Mm.
Then you did exactly what you set out to do. Yeah. And so, like, I really just try to start, I make big goals, but I start small too, right. so that I can feel like I got something done. And that's been really helpful for me.
Yeah. Especially because the only thing that's promised to you, and it's promised to you, is that you have the audition. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? At least that much
there
is done.
There are people that don't get, listen, yeah. how many people do you know that are like, guys, I'm going out to LA for pilot season, and they're out there for 3 months and they don't get one.
No, it's yeah. hard. Yeah. Yep. And so if you have an opportunity, you got to give yourself all the, you have to drench that opportunity of all its juice,
mm-hmm.
if that makes any sense.
Ooh, get that juice.
Get the juice out of that opportunity.
Well, I think the other part of this is that I think you even bring this up because it's sort of like the opposite scenario circumstance of like, okay, well then I could spend my life, like this could be the alternative to me spending my like time just like going online and like losing my mind. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like you at a certain point you have to ask yourself this hypothetical question of like, well, what would my life look like if I didn't give the time to
all that other shit?
Exactly. Like, oh, I would just be improving myself, working for myself, like creating opportunities, et cetera, et cetera. Like
yeah.
I think that is also like how it ties back into everything else in the book is that like, look at this whole other side of like the world that's like open to you. Like, sure, like do what's important, like do the work that's important, like in terms of social justice, but also like give yourself the time and the space to like just be the best version of yourself.
Absolutely.
And also I was kind of surprised to learn actually that you used to be quite the stoner.
Oh yes.
And
we gotta talk about
this. We must talk about this because I actually I smoke quite a bit of weed, so does Bowen. I probably smoke a little bit more than you do. I smoke every single day.
Okay.
But you get into this in the book about self-care, about quitting. Just
yeah.
Quitting.
You actually had to stop. And yeah. so now, as of recently, I've started to realize that my memory is a little worse than I would like it to be.
Ugh.
And so do you think that that has anything to do with that? And also, because the answer is probably yes. Like, when did you get to the point where you were like, do I have to stop doing this entirely? I know you talk about this in the book, but I'd like everyone
yeah,
to hear it.
Yeah, sure.
Can you talk about that?
I mean, I used to be like a full-blown wake and bake smoke pot every single day. Mm-hmm. And like, full disclosure, if I'm at like a party and someone like offers me a hit, I'm like, all right,
it's cool.
Yeah. I'll do it. But like, there was just a time where like, if I didn't have weed, I was like, oh my God, we don't have any weed. Like, we gotta call the guy. Like, what's going on?
God,
he's not texting me back. Like, yeah. what's happening? Yeah. Like, do I have to go downstairs and like ask the guy? And, like,
yeah.
like we had a guy in the building who was like our backup guy.
Oh, yeah. Or, you always have your backup.
That's nice,
guy.
Though.
Yeah, but like, it's not good weed.
okay,
like, it's
okay,
not
yeah, yeah.
good.
He's it's in the backup situation.
He's in yeah. the building.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah,
my
yeah.
building is not, we're not doing high quality, like, lights and shit. Like, it is like swag. Baggy, like not cute weed.
Yeah.
And then you have like the friend who smokes a lot of weed who can just like show up to their house and be like, how's it going? What's going on with you? Oh my God, there's a joint here. Let's smoke it. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like I was setting up all these scenarios to like help me smoke weed.
Yeah.
And then what I was realizing was I stopped being like a fun stoner and I started being like, have a meltdown, start crying, I feel like my world is ending stoner.
Wow.
Where like I would just get so overwhelmed and I would either like lay in bed and do nothing, or I would like go on social media and I would see what everyone else was doing and I would start feeling really bad about myself. Mm. And then I would start arguing with my husband. And every single time he would just be like, are you stoned right now? And I was just realizing that pot was not fun for me anymore. And I right. do think it was for me, at least, because it was an everyday thing, like start my morning stoned and be stoned all day long and then like get to 2 o'clock where you like feel a little like the buzz change a little bit and you're like, oh God, I'm still stoned.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? And so I think that for me, I just realized that like I needed to stop smoking weed because it just was, and the circumstance for me was that I got really sick. I lost my voice, and like I was like at a party and I smoked weed, and then the next day I couldn't talk. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't talk for like 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
And like I had just been invited to go on Nightly Show. I was like on vacation and I got the email that was like, hey, can you go on Nightly Show? And I was like, fuck, I gotta get my voice back. Like, I have to get my voice back. And I'm on vacation and everyone's smoking weed and drinking, and I'm not gonna do it. I'm just not gonna smoke weed because I need to, my voice needs to
be myself.
I need my voice to come back. And so I just was like, all right, I'm quitting cold turkey. And then my voice came back like 2 days before I was supposed to fly back.
Wow.
And then I got the job, and then I realized, like, okay, I really need to, like, focus on this job. I'm in like a new circumstance and smoking weed is not helping me.
Right.
And so I think I had a few times where I like tried to go to work stoned and I was just like, this is really bad. Yeah, this is just like not helping me. It's stressing me out.
Oh my God.
And it's like not fun anymore.
That rang such a bell for me just there. One time I was on my tour guide job and I had had an edible. And I was like, I can't really believe I even just said that, but like, but I don't have the job anymore. So it's like long in the past, but who cares? But I was standing there and I was like, I have to talk to people like in 2 seconds. And I was one of the highest I've ever been in my life.
One of the highest.
But I was like, oh, maybe my decision making isn't good anymore.
Yeah, I do think that you build up a tolerance and it changes like in your body. And like I've heard this about like certain foods that like if you eat a certain food all the time that your body can just like develop an allergy to it. Like suddenly, like those people who are like, too. I've drank milk my whole life and then all of a sudden I became like super lactose intolerant, or suddenly I found out I had a gluten intolerance and like I've ate bread my whole life. It's never bothered me. And now suddenly I get like stomach cramps. I really think that happens with weed, that like if you do it a lot, that your body like can change how it reacts to it.
Yeah.
And I've had people be like, you need a different strain. And I'm like, I'm not trying to do like research.
I literally was just about to ask you, do you think it could be the strain? Like, because there was a time where it was a bad strain and I was getting anxious every time. I also was having some tough times with my relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that situationally and also the weed I was smoking were making me literally think I was going to get hit by a car no matter where I was.
Yeah.
Okay. It was, if I was on the 7th floor of a building, gonna get hit by a car. Wow. Can't explain to you how I knew a car would hit me.
I have had so many friends be like, well, you need to have this kind. And I'm just like, you know what? I don't need to do research. Like, that's just not in my nature. Like, again, if I'm at a party and like someone offers to me and I'm like, all right, I could do like a hit. But I was at the point where like we had like a giant roar bong that like was on display in our apartment all the time. Uh-huh. And it was like whenever you came over, it was like you need to christen the roar. Like it was like a whole
lifestyle
process. And it was a lifestyle. And I was like spending so much money on it. And I just realized like
it's a lot of money too.
It's a lot of money. And I do have some days where I'm like, God, I would love to be stoned right now. And then I think, oh, I have a lot of shit to do. Like, if I got stoned right now, I would not be able to do anything.
I will say I do wait until my stuff for the day is done. At least that.
Here's the thing. I don't think, for me, it's a personal thing in the sense like I don't begrudge anyone.
Right.
I had some great times when I was stoned. I also sometimes realize like when I'm recounting a time that was great when I was stoned, I was like, this is only great to me.
Yeah, exactly.
This was not actually like that funny of a story. I'm telling the story and realizing nothing happened. No, nothing happened. The whole story is like, and we were so stoned.
Yeah, and honestly, it's so true. Like whenever we talk about, we go to Orlando like once a year, like that's like our thing. Whenever we talk about it, we're always like, and also we were high. And it just kind of sounds like, okay, who cares?
It sounds like a 17-year-old.
Douchey. It sounds stupid.
I also realized because of that, I had certain friends. I mean, like, God, it sounds like I had a heroin addiction, but I was literally like, I didn't really like you that much. Like, we just got stoned together and I like didn't really know anything about you. We would just get stoned and like laugh.
Yeah.
And now that I don't really smoke weed like that anymore, I'm just like, I don't really want to hang out with you because all you do is smoke weed and like, that's totally okay. But then I realized, like, what do we have if not weed?
Wow. Yeah.
We don't have anything. We literally, all we have is weed. And so, I don't know.
Well, I'm happy I said it out loud.
You.
Well, just because, like, I don't know. Like, it was so funny because, like, when I was in high school, it was never. Like, you talk about starting smoking weed early.
Oh, my.
Early.
Listen, my mom read the book, and when she.
It wasn't a candle?
She didn't. So, like, when I was in high school, I smoked weed every single day, and I told my mother it was a candle. And she did not know. And so after she read the book, she didn't mention that specifically, but I know that's what she was talking about. She was like, it was really great. Like, she was like, there are some language. And she's like, there's also some unknowns revealed. And
I was like, unknowns revealed?
I was like, what is this? Is this like an email to HR? Like, what the fuck?
There were unknowns revealed.
Oh, that's a great combination of words.
Potential title of ep.
Oh, yeah.
Unknowns revealed.
Yes.
I love finding the title.
Yeah. So my mom had no clue. And I really think in retrospect, it was because my mom's brothers had like very serious drug problems. So my mom was like, drugs are bad. Like, all drugs are terrible. Mm-hmm. So she really kind of had no understanding or concept of like casual drug use.
Yeah, and how it should be harmless in its way.
Yeah, yeah, like to her, all drugs were like, you smoke crack, like you are gonna like you're gonna ruin your marriage and like live
poor
on the street. Yeah, and like I was smoking weed every day and like getting good grades and like I was totally fine. And so she would ask me what that smell was and I was just like, oh, it's a candle. And she just said, I honestly don't even know if she knew until she read the book. Because I never told her.
A candle that smells very specific.
Like, honestly, yeah, I was just saying, I was like, what is this aromatic weed that you were smoking?
What is a skunky-ass candle? Weed does, why would you want your house to smell like that?
There was one other part of the book which I was like, really kind of fascinated by, and I actually read it. My father drove me back into New York today, and I read this out loud to him.
Wow. Because, my God, this is so weird.
No, I know, to hear back.
No, but it's so cool, also like, wow, that is an honor.
So there's a whole chapter in the book about hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I did not know many of these statistics. Well, I also underlined this sentence, which I love, which is, be who you needed when you were younger, which I think is just something really great to remember. But I just want to read this. In 2017, two 16-year-old twin sisters at Boston's Mystic Valley Regional Charter School were told their braided hair extensions were, quote, distracting and in violation of the dress code. When they refused to, quote, fix their hair, their natural hair that they were wearing, mm-hmm. they were banned from extracurriculars and prom and threatened with suspension. In 2016, Durham School for Creative Studies made a group of students remove the head wraps they were wearing to celebrate Black History Month. In 2013, a private school in Orlando threatened to expel 12-year-old Vanessa Van Dyke, whose voluminous natural look was so fierce that I'm kind of questioning my locks right now, if she didn't cut or shape her hair. And then it goes on to detail many more recent occurrences of schools, charter schools, but still, telling these girls that their natural hair was distracting. And you talk about how, you know, the transition or decision to do whatever you want to with a Black woman's hair or a Black girl's hair is very personal and it's just time consuming and all these things. And to think that these schools are like holding it against these people. It's just crazy. Yeah. I didn't know any of this.
I mean, historically, we have always been told that everything about us is wrong.
Right.
From, like, our bodies to our noses to our hair to the way we speak. Like, everything has been policed and really kind of shaped by this idea of like fitting into like whiteness, you know, and that's not to say that that doesn't happen across cultures, but for Black people especially, like it is this constant struggle of like making sure that I am myself, but also like don't make people uncomfortable. You want to make sure, like when I went natural, I remember my mom being like, are you going to be able to get a job? Wow. And me thinking like, what are you talking about? But also now knowing that, like, yeah, there are people who have lost their job because they dared to wear their hair in the way that it naturally comes out of their head. And we see this in, like, fashion and in entertainment where models are like, yeah, I am basically bald now because when I show up on set, they don't know how to do my hair and they're like ripping it out. Or I had to put weaves in and I had to dye my hair and straighten it and damage it because, I mean, and even now, like, I have a hairstylist that I bring with me, but I've always been used to doing my own hair because when I would show up on set, no one knew how to do my hair.
Right, right, right. They just, and like, it's like that with makeup as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And thank goodness for Delina, but I made sure she taught me how to do my own makeup and, like, what foundations to bring with me, because sometimes you go on set and I can't have her there, I'm out of state or something, and the person just doesn't know.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
They don't know. And so it is very interesting, especially because, again, that's that privilege, right? Of, like, why would you know that? Like, even the fact that when I was in high school, there was no natural hair care aisle in the store. And even now, it's like a tiny little space.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But in some stores, depending on what neighborhood you're in, there's no beauty products for me in that store. I have to go to the hood, or I have to make sure that I'm in, or I go specifically to, like, a black hair care store.
You mentioned in the book where you went to college for a short time, like, the closest, like,
it was an hour away.
That was appropriate for your hair was an hour away.
An hour away. Yeah. There was no one in. Crazy. I was living in Ann Arbor because I was going to University of Michigan. There was no one in Ann Arbor who could do my hair. And I was just like, wow, I guess I'm going natural now because I can't get my perm I can't get a relaxer here.
It's just so crazy. I think that almost nobody understands that that's the reality.
I mean, and the thing that I want people to walk away with when they read this book is that there are all sorts of realities that we are not aware of.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, I want to speak very openly and honestly about the fact, whether it's the fact that I'm able-bodied or the fact that I'm, you know, cis, I can go to my doctor and I can talk to them about my healthcare needs. And nobody says to me, well, have you thought about losing weight, or misgendered me, or refused certain service to me, or I don't have to worry about my housing. Like, there are 38 states in this country where you can legally deny housing to somebody because they are LGBTQ, or you can fire them.
Wow.
Legally.
The majority.
Legally. Yep, I mean, and those are things, again, I would never have to think about.
Right.
And so I really wanted to talk about this in, like, a comedic and approachable way, but also to say, like, we all have stuff that we have to learn, and we all have to, like, have our eyes opened at some point. And it's okay. We can do it together.
Yes. And you really do have such a skill. And I mean, like, that approachability and relatability that you have on camera, which is such a natural gift that you have, truly
translates to the
book.
Podcasting is, like, not really my medium.
We always say podcasts are a visual medium because we just take a picture at the end. It is an important part of the listenership
and
experience.
And Francesca's brought the visuals tonight.
You certainly have.
No, it's a fantastic book. I have a little passage I want to read.
I love a good hashtag passage.
Hashtag passage. Well, guys, just pick it up in stores, wherever you get books.
May 22nd.
But it's just, this is why I love this book. She does not do herself the disservice of being absolutely prescriptive, because she's like giving you advice, but she's also backing this up with, like, anecdotes or with examples of
always
when she has had to learn these things herself.
Yes.
It's so illuminating. It's so good. You should be so proud. You should be
Thank
so happy.
Thank you so much.
It's so good. I'm going to read this.
Go
is,
ahead.
This is towards the end of the book, but it's so good. I like gasped when I read this passage.
Oh, he gasped,
I gasped,
darling.
Honey. Okay, great. Here we go. The world is an unwieldy place. Okay. The world is an unwieldy place these days, and my little corner of it, the internet, is particularly stressful. It allows people to make anonymous claims without any repercussions. Many social media users seem dedicated to taking your words out of context to make you look stupid or worse. And the fact that we're often talking about life and death issues for people who haven't had the chance to advocate for themselves, and you have a ticking time bomb. I'm not sure I could call myself an expert in anything other than styling my hair and bad puns, but I truly believe that trying to get it right is worth something.
Yeah.
So good. So good. Aww, beautiful.
Thank you so much. Ugh.
Excellent.
Excellent.
An excellent review from Las Culturistas. Use that pull quote. Watch when they take the hardcover back and all of a sudden there's a new book.
Oh.
And it says Las Culturistas approved, like a Newbery Award.
Yes.
Like, that's what I want.
Like a Newbery Award, like elementary school.
Newbery Rule of Culture number 92. The Las Culturistas approval is the new Newbery Award. Okay. Say it with me.
The Las Culturistas approval is the new Newbery Award. And Matt, the adult version of the Newbery Award is the Pulitzer Prize. I just want to let you know.
Well, okay. I have to tell you all, this is my very first podcast interview about the book.
Ooh! Okay.
And I'm just so glad that I popped that cherry consensually with the both of you.
Yay!
And I just thank you so much. I mean, it is scary writing a book.
Of course.
It is so scary, especially because, you know, again, that passage was a perfect example. I worry about mm-hmm. people like taking things out of context or deciding that they just, you know, disagree with me and they're so mad about this and that, or just pulling something apart and making me say something I didn't say. It's very scary, but it feels so great and like affirming to hear that you all resonated with it and you enjoyed it and it spoke to you. And so just thank you so much for taking the time to even read it.
Oh my thank God. You for writing it, first of all, because many people are going to benefit from it. And I think also something that people forget is, like, I totally identify with you saying, like, it's nerve-wracking and it's scary to put this out because you're a very sensitive person.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
You have to be
yeah.
to be this sensitive yeah. to all these issues. Uh-huh, I mean, uh-huh. and yeah. you see, like, you putting on this sort of brave and very public face and dealing with this difficult, tough stuff, especially coming from a marginalized perspective
yeah.
where, you know, sometimes it can feel like the world is just ready to jump down your throat. And so this is, you know... Not this is kind of like you throw this around lightly, but like this is a brave thing to step forward and say, here's my mistakes, here's my successes, and here is how you can learn from them. Seriously.
An edifying read. Okay.
An edifying read. That's the
another
poll quote,
quote.
I guess.
Thank you.
We're going to move on.
We are going to move on because speaking of, you know, people who step forward bravely.
Oh, here we go.
We do have a... Yes, I'm happy you're pouring the wine because I'm going to need some as
get
well.
Get it.
This is a friend of ours who's decided to... He's elected to participate in our voice memo. Oh, you bitch.
This is a voice memo from a friend of ours, Dylan Marin.
Oh, my God.
Dylan Marin.
He's decided.
Listen,
bitch. And Dylan Marin will be with us in a couple short weeks, you guys.
I love Dylan.
Just
Dylan
best.
Is a fabulous specimen.
A true
And I
want
to tell
angel.
Him something over the air, and I know he'll listen to this episode.
Here
you look
go.
Like a hunk in your TED Talks.
Listen,
Such
bitch.
A hunk. With those
you
little
pearl earrings.
You looked good, the you motherfucker.
The TED Talk speaker with a pearl earring,
Ms.
mama.
Ms. TED Talk, honey.
Vermeer painting.
The category is TED Talk.
Okay. This is a voice memo from Dylan Marin. And I think Dylan is doing his own little take on a popular segment on this show.
Okay,
so
let's see.
Let's take a listen.
Matt, Bowen, Francesca, it is your daughter, Dylan Marin.
Dylan.
And
just in a hallway.
About to
the acoustics
read
are good.
All for filth.
Ooh.
In a new segment that I'd like to call I Do Think So, Honey.
Oh.
So, I'll begin. I do think so, honey, Matt Rogers. Matt, you are so fucking talented
oh,
and
wow.
incredible that if they sold VIP courtside season pass tickets to the Matt Rogers experience, I would buy them with the black Amex card that I do not have,
oh.
and you would see me cheering you on like that Drake gif where he's clapping at a basketball game because you are that fucking good.
Oh, likewise, honey.
Do think so, honey. Bowen Yang.
Okay.
If you had attended the performing arts day camp that I went to for 6 years, I would have been so fucking intimidated by you
what?
That I would have like made up an excuse not to like you because I would have felt insecure next to your gifted ass.
No.
So lucky me for
I don't
knowing
accept.
You now as a more confident adult when I can regularly text you to tell you how much you mean to me
Dylan.
Because you do.
You're such a beautiful person.
And finally, I do think so, honey, Francesca Ramsey. Okay, so already Everyone already knows that you slay at literally everything you do.
Yes, yes.
But what they don't know is that you're an amazing friend and a support system and a mentor, and deal with it, babe, because until your lawyers specifically ask me not to, I will continue to send you bad pop songs that I unironically love because I want to share them with a person I love, which is you. So whoops, I do think so, honey, Francesca Ramsey.
Oh my god,
Dylan Marin.
I love him so much. Also because he is... When he becomes extremely famous, someone is going to have a field day impersonating him.
Yes!
Hi, I'm Dylan Marin. Like, he just gives
that's
you the
good,
voice.
That's a good...
Maybe it's me.
Good
maybe Dylan. It's going to be me. But all I'm saying is he is an icon.
The nicest. Okay, so Dylan wrote on my pilot.
Yes.
And I remember one time we were trying to come up with, like, insults for a straight woman. And I think oh, eventually God. We used, like, a population pantry was the,
oh, my
was
God.
The insult we used. But everybody was going around and pitching ideas for, mm-hmm. like, ways to just, like, shit on straight women. And Dylan was like, I've got one, you woman.
Ah!
And we were like, he couldn't do
he
it
because be
he's so nice.
Yeah.
It was the funniest thing I've ever experienced because I was just like, you are the sweetest guy.
Yeah, he's
and
no
he,
joke.
It was so funny because he was trying so hard. And I was like, I love you so much. You are just like the most genuinely good and nice person. And to circle back to the book, I had so many times that I called Dylan crying and I was like, should I tell this story in the book? And Dylan was like, you're fine. Send it to me. Like, I would send him stuff and I would just be like, tell me what you think of this. Mm-hmm. And he would just like be so affirming and just, he is just such a good soul. Like,
yeah.
You really don't find many people
it's
like
not,
that.
It's also not a brand. True. It's not a front. He's exactly
that's
the way
who he is.
He's
no.
exactly the way he you think he would be when you watch his videos. And he's a great
he
friend.
He makes you want to be a better person. Because sometimes
yes.
I want to like send
he
him
does.
Like a shady text. And I'm like, you know what? Dylan does not need this negativity.
Every time I talk to him, I have that thought. I'm like, no, I can't. This Dylan
like,
doesn't
I
deserve
can't
this.
Say this
yeah,
to him.
You're right. Sometimes I am a little shady. Like, that is part of who I am. And it's true. Like, whenever, like, Dylan's looking at you and, like, you don't know if he can, like, participate in the shade. Like, and he'll sometimes give you a knowing look, like, girl,
I affirm you.
I understand the shade, but I don't know if I've ever heard him be truly shady.
Can I tell you, actually, wait, and I think
reveal.
He lets it out.
He lets it out, and I think he's okay with me saying this. I was on the phone with him today because I was explaining, like, what he needed to send in for this voice memo bit, and then he was like, oh my God, he was like, so Matt and I did these interviews with people at Tribeca Film Festival, and we interviewed Ansel Elgort and Suki Waterhouse,
wow,
this British actress, and then, so Dylan was like, oh my God, I love that interview with Ansel, and who is that actress? And I was like, oh, Suki Waterhouse. She's great. She's like, you know, like one of those like posh British actress models. And then Dylan goes, oh yeah, you know, I probably like waited on like the millionth iteration of her back at my restaurant. And I was like, Dylan.
And then dime a dozen.
I didn't even call that out or anything. I didn't even like react to that. He pulled himself back and was like, wait, no. That's, you know what? That's too mean. I take that back. And I was like, Dylan.
Well, guess what, Dylan?
It's out there now.
It's out there now.
No. And that's
you
all...
said something correct, and everyone knows.
And that's also like the most innocuous thing.
Yeah,
no.
It wasn't even. I was like, where is the shade?
There's no shade.
He's such a sweetheart.
Such a sweetheart.
When he's going to be on our show, you guys, to promote his TED Talk.
Oh, so
we're
going
to talk to him in just a short couple weeks.
Spoiler alert. I mean, it's online, but he gets an immediate standing O.
Really?
Yeah. Have you seen it?
It was
I haven't seen
so
it.
It's
so
good.
It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But anyway, now it's time to move on. I don't just
I'm
going to
watch it. I'm going to watch it.
Go see it.
All right. So is it time?
It's time.
Okay.
It is time for I Don't Think So, Honey.
And we're going to get you on a live show one of these days.
Yes,
we have been
every
asking.
Every time I have something, I'm not here.
Listen,
she's busy.
You're busy. She's busy. But the thing is, guys, just a quick little plug before we continue. Are you coming to see us at Vulture Fest on May 19th, Saturday, May 19th, which is just in a few short days, at 8:30? Are you coming to see us in Los Angeles at Echoplex on June 12th? Are you coming to these events? Are you coming to see us at Clusterfest on Saturday, January 2nd, Comedy Central's Clusterfest? We're going to be at 4 p.m.
Well, if you're not going to go to any of those things, at least come to another two events that we're doing at Vulture Festival. We're moderating the RuPaul's Drag Race panel.
Yes, and we're moderating the Wendy Williams panel.
Which is going to be very interesting.
Yes.
Because, like, Wendy, I'm like...
Oh, my God.
Wendy is, like,
we have things.
I really want to do her show.
Oh my God, you should definitely do her show.
I want to do her show so badly.
She'll say, how you doing?
How you doing?
Wendy, like... And I have to think about, and I'm just, like, letting this all out and airing this out publicly, like, on the record. Like, she is someone who... Everyone, I feel like, goes back and forth on, but she's just so good.
Yeah.
When she's good, she's great.
When she's good, she's great. And when she's problematic AF, which is, like, why I would love to do her show, because I'm, like... I could tell her about herself, but I could tell her about myself. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I feel like we could have a great...
I think she'd be very receptive to you.
I feel like we could have a great... shady conversation, but also just like a self-reflective one.
Yeah. Well, she is, I think, open to a good deal of shade because she dishes it out for her check.
And she knows how to take it,
and
too.
And also, I mean, I think she knows how to take it. It's only when a guest comes on her show and is Omarosa level messy or Bethany messy.
Yeah.
You have to be like, open to, like, you can dish it and take it.
Yes.
And I think that that's what she respects.
Yeah.
That is major. Y'all are booked and busy.
We're a little bit booked.
It'll be fun. So come see us share the stage with Miss Wendy Williams.
Miss Wendy Williams and the Drag Race Queens, and it's going to be very fun.
So
and
fun.
Also our own show at Vulture Fest, Cluster Fest, and June 12th, LA, and then June 29th at the Bell House, you guys. It's going to be very fun.
You heard it here first. Okay,
wow.
Great. So let's do.
I'm comfortable going first.
You can go first. This is Matt Rogers.
And I hope that you're okay with me doing this.
Oh my God. Well, that's a terrible disclaimer.
Okay.
This is Matt Rogers's I Don't Think So, Honey's time starts now.
I don't think so, honey, that it has taken us this long to quote unquote officially cancel R. Kelly. Let me tell you something.
Wow.
It should have been canceled when he tried to marry a 13-year-old, let me repeat, 13-year-old
Aaliyah.
In the words of my co-host Bowen Yang, cults are so 1978, babe. Ain't nothing wrong with a little bit of bump and grind, but there is definitely wrong with imprisoning women. You are starting a sex cult, bitch. Look, I'm sorry, but there is an article out right now which is detailing 43 celebrities that have worked with R. Kelly, and single picture it says, the representative declined to comment. Here's what you say. My client denounces R. Kelly.
Thank you. R. Kelly
is done.
Thank you. 5 seconds.
Take the key out of the ignition, honey. I don't think so, honey.
Oh,
R. Kelly.
That's for 1 minute. I don't know if I can top that. That is pretty. That's major.
Well,
that's
I did use two jokes that Bowen Yang has said before, but I did cite.
I donate them.
I have the bibliography on Bowen
Yang.
I was like, I don't see nothing wrong with quoting Bowen Yang.
Thank you.
That was also an R. Kelly joke.
Absolutely. And we're allowed to quote, but we're not appreciating.
We're quoting to diss.
And here's the thing, guys. No, it's over.
It's done.
Why does Chris Brown have a Grammy after hitting Rihanna? Not even hitting, beating up.
Oh my God.
Almost killing.
Jesus.
You really have to get it together with these people. If they've done something dangerous, they're done, guys.
Wow.
They're done.
Yep.
There's no discussion. There is a nostalgia element that you can keep to your goddamn self.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. But they're done. Like, I want every Las Culturistas listener to know that R. Kelly is officially done.
Okay.
And we're not going to continue this conversation for 16 more years.
Mm.
Wow. Thank you. There you go. I mean, mine is not going to be as, like, fire as that, but let's go. This is going to be
Bowen,
very...
Bowen, you sell yourself short.
I'm just saying...
I believe in you.
Thank you. I'm just saying this is going to be much more frivolous and silly.
It's okay.
Okay.
We need all of them.
We need all kinds.
Perfect.
And Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey, on this episode begins now.
I don't think so, honey. Theatrical spaces that are not in the round, honey. We went
to go see Once on This Island on Broadway.
Slay.
At Circle in the Square Theater. And
go off.
Not a bad seat in the house,
no,
motherfucker.
Honey.
Because you know why? It was in the round. Everyone enjoys it. No one gets a bad view. We were in the last row in the fucking nosebleeds. And I loved Hayley Kilgore belting out those notes.
Tony nomination.
Tony nominee Hayley Kilgore.
Yes.
We're rooting for you. Oh my God. If you're, just look. Eschew.
30 seconds.
Eschew the normal layout of theatrical spaces.
Get creative.
We're not Rome anymore, bitch.
No, bitch.
Okay, we are in the new age of theater.
Circle in the Square.
Yes,
Circle
honey.
In the Square knows what they're doing. I want everything in the round.
15
and
seconds.
Makes for good immersive experiences, too. We had Leah Salonga running up and down those steps.
Mention her.
And Leah Salonga, iconic.
Mention the other one.
Oh, and oh my God, who? Oh my God, Tamara Gray, of course. Tamara Gray was amazing. I was not forgetting her. I was not being willfully obtuse and forgetting her.
And that's one minute.
Wow.
Tamara Gray.
That's a name I have not heard in a while.
She's fantastic.
I tweeted at her.
And she faved.
And she
liked.
And she retweeted and made a little comment herself. She said, what a blessing.
Oh,
thank
wow.
you for the continued support. What a blessing.
Excellent.
And I said, Tamara Gray is a slay in Once on This Island.
Yes, yes.
She plays the concept of death.
Yeah. She is so talented.
It's crazy.
I'm happy to hear that she's...
You should go see Once on This Island.
I love that. I remember seeing that show in high school, like at a local school, and being blown. It was not in the round.
There you go.
But I'm excited to see it in the round.
You are right about this. Because the in the round experience, there is not a bad seat
not
in the house.
Seat.
And also the freedom that the actors have to be able to act in a 360
but also,
way.
Yeah, exactly. Because you got to act with your back.
You
got to act with your back.
That's a whole different side. Literally.
This girl that plays the lead, Hayley Kilgore, she's a slay.
Phenomenal.
And Leah Salonga should be named queen. Tamara Gray should be named queen. We did not see Alex Newell, but we heard he's incredible, and the understudy was fabulous.
Yes, yes,
we also didn't see Norm Lewis, who I guess is in it a lot. But the cast was very good, put it on your list. You must. It just scored many Tony nominations, and it doesn't have an end date. They're trying to keep it open as long as possible.
Okay.
Right.
So
and it's worth
you must
seeing.
Go.
Absolutely.
You must go.
Okay.
Okay, Francesca.
I'm ready.
Are we ready? This is Francesca Ramsey's I Don't Think So, Honey. Her time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Playing devil's advocate? Does the devil need you to advocate for him? I don't think so, honey. The devil is busy all the goddamn time. He don't need you to help. Why don't you just put it out there that you think those bigoted ass opinions? You ain't standing up for the devil. I don't need that to hear you have your opinion about, like, the gays, about racism, about privilege. Like, no, bitch.
30
just
seconds.
Say what you say and feel what you feel, okay? Like, the devil, he knows he's dressed, he's fresh, he's hot, he comes ready. He doesn't need you to work for him or speak on his behalf, so don't even slide up
seconds.
In my DMs or in my comments or in my emails, and definitely do not disrupt my Thanksgiving dinner with your devil's advocate ass.
Five
you
seconds.
Can keep it. I do not think so, honey.
What a nothing embellishment to anything at all.
To
why do you say that?
Advocate.
Just say that you actually think that shitty, awful thing.
Yes. Yes.
It's like a get out of jail free card.
But no.
But it's not.
It's not. And also, this is funny because on our live show, Mitra Druhari, now over a year ago, did I Don't Think So, Honey, Devil's Advocate. And she was like, it's the devil. Why would you advocate for him?
You know what? Somebody needs to think about him.
Yes. And this is actually, you guys won't ever get to hear this, but the last one you did, which we love, it was too hot for air or our computers because the whole thing melted down. But you said, I don't think so, honey. People saying, can I pick your brain?
You can. Listen, if you email me and say, can I pick your brain? Like, I automatically do not want to read the rest of your email.
If you want to pick Francesca Ramsey's brain, pick up the book. Well, that escalated quickly.
Shit.
May 22nd.
Get
the
that promo.
Are on here. Get the promo.
Yes.
And I want to say one more time, I love this book.
So good.
This is really good, and it's funny, it's entertaining, it's relatable, and you will learn a lot, especially at the end.
Yes.
There is Francesca's simple explanation of not-so-simple concepts.
A gorgeous glossary.
And it's really great. It's just a really, maybe, and honestly, even if you consider yourself like a quote-unquote woke person, I guarantee there's something in here that you'll learn and be able to take away. And I love it. I think it's going to be a huge success.
Thank you so much. This was a great way to kind of full circle moment from that lost episode.
From the lost up to now.
Yes.
And you'll never know the specifics of what went down with Taraji behind the scenes of Black Girls Rock, but just know that Taraji's amazing.
Yes. Oh my God. Life changing.
That was an anecdote for the ages.
Francesca, thank you so
much.
Oh,
thank you for having me. Congratulations. I'm so excited to see all of the cool stuff y'all are working on. I always feel very special when I see other people tweeting about you or sharing something about you. I'm like, I know them. Those are my boys. So yeah, just keep slaying.
Oh my God.
And thank you for letting me be part of your glow up.
Oh my gosh.
Please.
You're doing that to us.
We gotta say the picture on the book is looking very fresh.
Very good.
I also love this yellow top.
Thank you.
Check out the yellow top.
You need
you guys.
A pop of color.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, we always close with the song. I think I have one.
What's the song, babe?
Sitting up in my room. Bad here thinking about you. I must confess, I'm a mess with you. Sitting up in my room, but I can't think about you.
Have you ever loved somebody so much it makes you cry? Have you ever needed someone so bad you just sleep at night? Have you ever tried to find the words but they don't come out right? The boy is mine.
Ooh, what a medley.
Giving up, I've had about enough.
It's not hard to see. The more is mine.
Bye.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.